Episode 36, Favorite Sci-Fi Characters.
Welcome to the Strangers and Aliens podcast.
Strangers. To boldly say what needs to be said.
Would you be a stranger or an alien? Or would you be a strange alien?
The truth is out there. I am your father's best friend, Plumber. Superman.
Wonder Woman.
Heroes. Villains. Captain Picard versus Captain Kirk.
Do you think that there's room in sci-fi for God? The very first thing that God did was that he created something, so we have a creative God.
This is Strangers and Aliens Podcast.
Hello and welcome to Strangers and Aliens, where we discuss imaginative fiction and faith. I'm Dr. Jace O'Neill.
And I'm not Ben Avery, I guess.
And I am Ben Avery, ironically. But I am not Steve MacDonald.
That's me.
Yeah. And we are the Strangers and Aliens. So,
yes.
How you guys doing? Good Thanksgiving?
Very good.
Yeah.
We did have a good Thanksgiving. We had several people over at our place. We, as our tradition, we invite people over. And then we play football, which we had some really good games going on. Pretty intense competition. And it was a good time.
We had an 8-pound turkey, and we still had leftovers.
It was only 8 pounds?
It was 8 pounds, yeah.
No,
it was one of those heritage turkeys, so they didn't, like, pump it up full of drugs and do weird stuff to it to make it huge. It was supposed to be about 15 pounds, but we had to take what they had because they didn't have, like, you know, a selection of thousands of, you know, 30-pound turkeys.
So this is the diet turkey, the ones they put on a strict diet.
You know, no, they feed
they have
them
on my treadmills.
No, they feed them good stuff, and they let them age normally, and they don't pump them full of hormones, and they don't.
Well, let me just tell you, one of my dilemmas for Thanksgiving was because traditionally
I was going to ask you about this.
Yes, we usually our family tradition is we go in and we always buy the largest fresh turkey there. Well. I found a turkey and it was great. The size was wonderful, but then I found one that was 2 pounds heavier. And let me tell you, this 2-pound turkey looked beautiful because I don't know how in the world your turkey ended up eight pounds. This turkey was all natural, all everything, all the good stuff, good fed, naturally aged, everything. And it was a massive piece of meat. And so I'm sitting there going, the biggest issue is the only thing that separated them was 2 pounds and $30. So I put on Facebook that my principles had been put to the test because, you know, am I going to go with the family tradition and get the biggest turkey of all time? Is that 2 pounds really worth $30? And I really did. I put both turkeys in my cart, and I walked around with my wife trying to look at everything else, just try to let it set so I could figure out what to do with this dilemma.
And what'd you do?
I don't want to say.
Yeah, he wouldn't say. That's
yeah.
Why I was going to ask, because I saw it on Facebook, and I thought, I bet he went with a $30 one, a $30 extra one.
You're not Scottish.
But I couldn't.
So I would imagine you would just go with the you know, not cheap one.
I couldn't figure out what it was, what principles were put to the test for you. If it was a money thing, or if it was a pride thing.
No.
Or if it was big turkey, big family, big group.
No, the principles. There's two principles, and that was the issue. Is the principle of following the tradition of getting the biggest fresh turkey. That principle of always doing that. And then the principle of being financially responsible. But then you can easily justify that. Well, we're bringing people over. we're having a lot of people that don't have a place to go, so
why not?
That 2 pounds could go a long way. So there's two conflicting principles there.
My question to you is, why not just, you know, get a second turkey that's less than $30?
Because this $30 extra turkey was beautiful. It was big, and it was the biggest. It goes back to the principle of getting the biggest.
Did it look beautiful on the platter?
Oh, it. Well, the turkey that we end up getting, regardless, looked beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. I think we know what you did now.
So, yeah.
You covered yourself well. I don't think I tricked it out of you, but I do think we know what you did.
You can think whatever you want. Oh, the truth. Only my wife and I actually know the real truth. So.
And now we do too.
You really don't.
It's the, it's the implied truth, not the real truth.
Oh, gotcha. And Ben, how about yours?
Schrodinger's cat. It's a half a turkey.
Ben, your Thanksgiving, how was that?
It was good. It was good. Thanksgiving is not one of my favorite holidays. Enjoy it. Yeah, I enjoy it, but it just doesn't have... And maybe because my childhood was spent in Canada. and we're doing Thanksgiving too late or something. Yeah. But... You know, it was good, though. We spent it with my wife's family, and her brother came down with his wife and their baby, who's the same age as our baby. And that was fun, and it's always good to, you know, catch up with them. And but it wasn't a huge family get-together like it has been in the past. So,
gotcha.
But, yeah, it was a good day. It just, you know, it's not one of my favorite holidays. So.
Well, you know, last weekend was a big weekend, but I'm actually looking forward to this weekend. And Steve, I was hoping we got started a little bit late. I'm like, well, Steve doesn't get on here soon, I'm going to have to go because I have a big weekend planned.
That's right. You got the big birthday, right?
Oh, no, that's not for December. That's not for 2 weeks.
Never mind.
That's not for a couple weeks.
Okay, so what is it this week?
I am, well, Fridays I work. I teach a class until around 11. But then after that, I'm actually going to take a personal retreat because I've been so strapped busy that I need time away and alone. So I'm actually going to a monastery to spend some time in prayer and study in preparation for this big next year and our church plant launch. So I'm really, really looking forward to that.
I didn't know they had any Protestant monasteries.
It's not a Protestant monastery, I don't believe.
I don't think they do, Steve. But
yeah.
Catholic monasteries do open their doors to Protestant dudes.
And they do.
And girls, I guess, too. But
I've already talked with the priors. They are actually excited for me to come. They know why I'm coming, and they are praying for my arrival. And so they basically, it's a place from the people who have gone, who suggested the place to me, who are also Protestants. They said it's a great place for prayer and reflection, and so I'm really looking forward to that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I've got my books, my Bible, my regular clothes to just not have to do a bunch of stuff. Just really seek the Lord and rest.
That's awesome. Because last weekend was your service, right? Or was that 2 weekends ago, rather?
That was the November 17th, yeah. So that would have been 2 weekends ago.
Yeah,
last
weekend was Thanksgiving.
Yes. So it's
how did that go? Because I don't think we've talked since.
It went really well. We the first one we had was during Hurricane Week, so that was interesting.
And this is for your church plant, I should say.
Yes, we have 3 preview services, which is, if you don't know anything about church planning, they often suggest doing 3 preview services so that the surrounding community gets to know that you're there and all that sort of thing. In fact, it's
so you
proven.
Don't sneak up on them.
Yes.
Surprise! Yes, here we are. We're a church, and we're right here.
Because studies have shown that church attendance is sliding, and that most churches, not most, a good majority of churches, especially those who have been around a while, not always the case, are actually in decline, not just in numbers, but also in age, that the churches have not been really pulling in the young people. And statistics show that church planting is the most effective form of evangelism in America. So our preview services are kind of a way for our team to kind of build up, and we have a sponsoring church who is sending us out. So it went really well. We've got a good team, as far as everything that's going, it's been a very, very good experience so far. not the horror stories I've heard in the past.
Awesome. That's great.
So what type of church is it? Is it a, like, I mean, it's not Baptist. It's not what is it?
Under? It's a Bible church. No, it's a non-denominational church. We are based on the NLMI fellowship, a lot of people on our team, we have people from Baptist backgrounds, from Reformed backgrounds, from charismatic Pentecostal backgrounds. A lot of the people, what I've seen happening across America is people, a lot of, especially young people and pastors are like, you know what? There are certain things that we have to agree on. That's, you know, Jesus is the only way. That's the core gospel. And there's these other things that we can agree to disagree on, but we still preach Jesus. And so a lot of the people on our team have different backgrounds and different views, for instance, on, you know, predestination, one says oversaved versus free will, that people have different views on that. And as Christians, we've decided we can discuss those. We don't want to argue and beat each other up over it because we all love Jesus. And so,
You don't want to go legalistic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we want to stand strong against a lot of other things. People are saying that, you know, some basic heresies, that there's multiple ways to heaven. There is no hell. Those types of things are completely outside of the bounds of solid scriptural backing.
Cool.
Very good. Well, I did have one thing I wanted to mention that I got to do, or that I did right before Thanksgiving. And actually, on Thanksgiving Day was when it was finalized. But I finished a book.
You played football. Oh.
No.
That's
I finished
two.
I finished a book. I finished. It's called Kingstone Hero Devotions, and it's a devotion book for kids using comic book stories, and that was pretty fun.
Is that with our Erisus thing?
Yeah. He's the guy in charge of Kingstone.
Yes.
And, it's the same publisher that did the Book of God and the Christ that I've done. So. Hmm. This one was different because they had a handful of stories that are already produced, and I had to choose from those stories what devotions I was going to use. And so, like, I had character words that I wanted to use, and I had to find a story and then figure out what character word was going to work with that story. And it was a nice challenge. It was fun. It was a lot of fun.
So, that's really cool. Congratulations.
So, well, we are here to talk about science fiction stuff, though, and we haven't talked too much about science fiction stuff, maybe we can move into that now. Although it's nice getting to, you know, catch up with each other and kind of let everyone know what's going on.
You know, some people actually care about what we do, and other people don't care at all.
I know. It's a hard line to follow, but we don't usually do too much small talk like this on the episode. So,
and as long as you listen to the episode, we don't care if you don't like it. Just as long as you listen to it.
But I think it's good therapy for us because I actually feel closer to you guys now. Now let's make fun of each other.
Yeah, let's move on.
That's enough.
Jerks.
That is enough.
So today's episode is about favorite science fiction characters. Favorite characters from sci-fi, not fantasy.
We want to make that very clear that this is science fiction, not fantasy.
And
we'll do that separate.
Partly
is fantasy
that gives us another episode to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
So we have each chosen five of our favorite characters.
Ben, correction. You and I have chosen five. Steve has chosen 45.
No, I've narrowed it down to 17.
But we're only sharing five.
Yeah, if you have to close your eyes and point, that's what you're going to have to do, Steve.
If I say them really fast.
No.
But we also have some feedback from some listeners who are on Facebook and on Twitter. And so we'll be able to share those too, some favorites. We didn't limit them to five. And some of them did not limit themselves.
Not at all. I can't believe some people just have no restraint.
Well, we didn't give them any guidelines. So, but we are going with five. And I think I did not do a top five. I did five different categories. And so I can't put it in order from you know, worst to best or whatever. I don't know what you guys did, but I think we should just, you know, share one and then let someone else share one and kind of move around like that. And
I'll do one because you guys all know this person's going to be on my list.
Okay.
So there's not going to be any shocker.
It's Donkey Kong Jr.?
Exactly. How did you know?
I know you. It's just like...
Yeah. Okay, you're completely clueless. So the first of all, this is hard because I did not want to pick multiple people from the same series or franchise.
Yeah.
But. So this one was challenging. So I obviously my number one was Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah.
Not surprised at all by that.
Not surprised. Perhaps. You know, the problem is the Next Generation has my three favorite characters of all the Star Trek characters. So I basically had to.
And there's over half your list if you did that.
Yeah, no, I was not going to do it. You know,
so Jean-Luc Picard, Wesley Crusher, and what? The Tribbles?
Actually, no. Jean-Luc Picard, and then I would have to say of that franchise, Worf and Data. One of my favorite villains is Q. But I will be honest. My list, if you would have asked me when I was growing up, would be very different back then because Wesley Crusher would have been my favorite. I actually liked Wesley Crusher because he was a kid, and I could relate to him as a kid. And so some of these my favorites in the franchises has actually changed over a period of time. But Jean-Luc Picard is my number one sci-fi fantasy guy. If I could serve under and learn from – if he was real – it'd be Jean-Luc Picard. That's who I'd go for.
Let me ask you a question about Wesley. Just a quick little tangent here.
Yeah.
Do you think that part of the hate for Wesley comes from the fact that the characters on the show totally disrespected Wesley? How many times did they tell him to shut up in that first season?
Oh, I know.
You know? Shut up, Wesley. Oh, you don't belong here, Wesley. Get out of here, Wesley.
And he was always right.
But I think that some of the hate comes from that the characters on the show didn't give him much respect.
Possibly. I mean, I don't
beginning
know.
Anyway.
See, I didn't realize that people didn't like Wesley until later on. Now when I watch it back, I could see why people found the character maybe annoying a little bit. But to be honest, because I know some people said that was Gene Roddenberry writing himself in. That was kind of his individual character. Well, that was what I liked about it because I related to him. I was like, I wanted to be Wesley Crusher. I wanted to be, you know, on the Starship Enterprise and be him. So for me, I actually was very sad when Wesley Crusher left the show because I really liked the dynamic of his mom and Jean-Luc Picard, kind of a pseudo nuclear family a little bit.
Yeah, I will say this. I really appreciated when they did bring him back.
Yeah,
those episodes, I liked them, and I think that the character, I think he was just used wrong. It's like here's another character from Stargate, the year after the Dr.
Michael Shanks.
The year after Michael Shanks left,
Dr. Jackson.
They brought in Parker Lewis Can't Lose. Colin.
Colin.
He's Parker Lewis Can't Lose, and the. And Jack O'Neill didn't like him that much. And the fans didn't like him. And I think part of the reason the fans didn't like him too much, I liked him a lot, but I didn't know. Again, I was watching through the series. I wasn't watching it when it happened. I was just kind of going through it. And I didn't know people didn't like him. And then I find out they did. And I think part of it was because Jack didn't accept him, so the fans didn't.
But, yeah, that might be the case. Although there was that relationship with Jean-Luc Picard, where Jean-Luc Picard, you know, even early on in the series, get him off my bridge. But then after a while, you know, he's like, let him be. There was this kind of fatherly thing towards him. So that might be some of the case. But I think that he was pretty much put into a responsibility very early on.
And part of that was a Picard character arc.
Yes.
For him to accept basically a child, which he hated. I mean, kind of
which was great because he was uncomfortable with kids. He was responsible for his father's death, or he was the commanding officer.
Yeah.
So I really liked that dynamic, and I always liked the relationship between him and Dr. Crusher Beverly because it was Jean-Luc Picard's family. Now they gave Picard a family later on. In the lighting episode, what was it? Light.
Inner Light,
yes. Where he lived a whole life and had family and kids, and that was his kind of family. But I've always looked at Wesley as his adopted son. That Wesley will always look to Jean-Luc Picard as his pseudo-dad.
Well, you kind of have to look at at the bridge crew of the Enterprise in every episode, or every series rather, the bridge crew as a family.
Yeah.
You know, you've got Picard, who's the surrogate father. You've got Crusher, who's the mother. You've got Worf, who's the grumpy uncle. you've got Data, who's the weird cousin.
Who's the toy.
But, you know, who just doesn't
now,
quite,
now
doesn't
he's
quite
the
fit
iPad.
In. You know, yeah. And then you've got Riker, who's that cool cousin, you know. And
the cool big brother, the cool big
yeah,
brother.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, but you've got that family dynamic thing happening there. And definitely the thing with Next Generation, the reason it stuck around as long as it did with some really bad episodes in first and second season, I believe, is because of the actors, especially Patrick Stewart, especially Jean-Luc Picard character.
See, yeah. With me, I was, I'm obviously about twice your age, Dr. J's, and I was coming out of the 70s where you had the Brady Bunch and, you know, the kids grew up and then you needed to have a younger child to keep telling the stories because everyone else was going off to college, and they had Cousin Oliver came in like in the last season, and you're like, Cousin who? He never was in any other episode, never mentioned in any other episode, and all of a sudden, bam, Cousin Oliver's there. And it was like the kiss of death for the Brady Bunch. And I'm not trying to champion the Brady Bunch. I'm just saying that was the kiss of death for that show. And then you had Battlestar Galactica, where instead of bringing him in the last season, they front-loaded him into the first season,
Boxy.
And it was just, okay, it's nice, and the actor did well, et cetera, but it was just too problematic to have a child as part of the whole dynamic
but,
of the team.
But Steve, that got me in though.
It got a lot
I mean,
of
that
people
was
in.
He was older yes. than I was.
Well, I'm really
anyway,
curious. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I just wanted to just finish that. But that's why I have a negative attitude with child actors and even like diminutive actors, like, you know, Return of the Jedi, the Ewoks came in, you're just like, oh no, this is another Boxy, another Daggett type of
thing. Aren't we doing like things we don't like later?
I'm just saying that's the reason why we're
that's
just
why
talking
you didn't
about
like Wesley, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm okay. Not talking about Jean-Luc Picard. Good
yeah.
choice for number one.
Well, so okay. Let me curious, that was my number one. I'm curious to know what your guys' number one. What's your top dog?
Well, here's where I'll go with that then. I will go in the same direction. This will be as no surprise to anyone. I chose Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
What?
Yes. Now, here's the reason I chose Captain Kirk, though, because I did look at some other people, but like I said, I did characters, or not characters, categories, and the category I did with Captain Kirk was movie and TV. And so this is my guy from movies and TV. And the reason I chose him above some of the other people that I could have chosen was his character arc. Not from the TV show, but the character arc that kind of, you know, came over from the TV show into the movies, and where you have in Star Trek II, where he's aging and finds out he has a child, that his indiscretions of his youth had consequences that he didn't even think about. He didn't even know he had that son. And then in 3, where he loses that son before he ever got to know him, and loses his best friend and loses his ship. And in 4, where he's starting to rebuild his life, and in 5, which we'll not talk about. And then in part 6, where he has to deal with all of the heroics. All of the heroics.
Talk
that,
about 5.
Look, we could. I'll champion 5, but just not right now, okay?
I don't want my pain taken away. I need my pain.
But number 6, again, you have that kind of thing where he is dealing with his indiscretions of his youth, or in this case, dealing with his whole culture of his youth, where he was fighting Klingons. That's what you did. And he hated Klingons because you fought them, and they killed his son. And now he's the one who's sent to kind of go and broker peace. And so all the way up through Star Trek VI, it's just that Captain Kirk character arc that totally, totally worked.
Well, I'd say, though, that with Kirk, you really didn't get to see the character arc until the movies.
Absolutely.
You know, with Picard, you could see it from beginning to end, which is why I always was more connected to him, because there's a lot more material for Jean-Luc Picard's character arc. But you're right, there was a very strong character arc for Kirk from the movies to the end.
And the character arc from the movies, though, comes from what you saw in the TV show, and comes from just who that character was, and what he did, and that kind of thing. And I love that they actually, I don't know if they intended to do it, like, we're going to address this, but they did, you know. And I really like that about his character. And actually, when I started watching the TV show, I also was watching the movies at the same time. We were renting them. And so I didn't have the whole body of the TV show that I'd watched before I saw Star Trek II and Star Trek III. And so, for me, it was kind of all blurred into one thing. And so I just really, that's why I went with Captain Kirk.
It's funny how different people just experience these things completely differently. I mean, I was watching Star Trek before I saw Star Wars, you know, but with you, I mean, you were watching the stuff at the same time, and with Dr. J, so it's probably just a completely different story, you know. I actually did not pick anyone from the Star Trek universes. I disqualified different ones for different reasons, and then I filled up my list with other things. I will go with an iconic character similar to the ones that you chose, and put that as the first one that I'm going to say here. Okay. Flash Gordon.
Ooh.
Old school.
That's
I love
my number
the old
two.
School stuff. Ah, well, there you go.
That's
See?
Awesome. No, that's not a bad thing here. I put him in my classic character.
Flash Gordon was not on my list.
I didn't think it would be. But the thing is, he was... growing up, you know, you had the Flash Gordon movie, which was super campy. But the thing is, if you dig into the character of Flash Gordon in the comic strips and the serials and stuff like that, it's just this strong character. He has one woman, Dale Arden. You know, sometimes he's, you know, drugged or whatever and tempted this way and that way. But Dale Arden is his girl. And he's there for the right. He doesn't have a huge backstory that is bogging him down that you have to keep going back to or anything like that. He's just the guy that's going to save the universe, you know. And
he'll
that's what he
does. He'll save every one of us.
That's right. So
see, I was gonna break out of that. Ben, I was thinking about breaking out into that, but I'm like, no, I'm not gonna interrupt Steve.
I hear you interrupting Steve. Push!
But
I have
he's
the soundtrack
very,
for that movie.
He's very much the very stereotypical space hero. And, you know, Star Wars is basically an offshoot of Flash Gordon, so I'm going with Flash.
And I went with Flash for much the same reason, not because of the movie. I like the soundtrack far more than I like the movie.
Soundtrack's great.
The soundtrack is on my rotation for when I was jogging. Notice I say was because I haven't done it in
a
while.
Yeah, I picked that up.
But, you know, the wedding march is hilarious.
Yeah.
It's just this – it's Queen playing the wedding march. But anyway, as far as the movie goes, it's good. It's campy. It's okay. You know, obviously they're trying to do the movie because of Star Wars
The Filmation cartoon, which came out around the same time, was a serial. And I was like, whoa, a serial cartoon.
And not your typical kiddie cartoon fare either.
Yeah.
But what did it for me is when I was in junior high, we had a big book of in the library of Flash Gordon comics.
Yeah.
Comic
strips?
Comic strips by... Foster, right? What's his name? Al Foster? No. Ray Mendoza?
That guy.
anyway, his artwork is just beautiful. He did Prince Valiant as well. And that artwork just struck me. And he has, like, you know, these guys with wings and these guys with lion heads and just the way his imagination just – but it was so realistic. And then, you know, later on, after I'm a fan of Star Wars, I find out, oh, this Flash Gordon was around since, before time.
Right.
And he was in these serials. And I watched the serials from, you know, the 40s and 50s or whatever they are from. And they're enjoyable. And just as I've come, I've really come to like the character because of what he represents as far as being one of the first characters to go there. Have the strange new world. And to have alien allies and to have, you know, these swashbuckly adventures in space.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why he's on my list. So actually, technically, I've just started round two because he was also my list. And he's my number two. So, Dr. Jace, who's your number two?
My number two, I decided to go in a slightly different direction. I wanted to go, I actually went with an anti-hero, which was Malcolm from Firefly.
Okay.
And I liked him because he's very different, where Picard was, you know, straight-laced by the book. You know, Malcolm, he pretty much his main rule was do it my way. It's my ship. At the same time, he felt a responsibility to his crew, regardless of some of their flaws, like Adam Baldwin's character, which had some issues there. But
Jane. Malcolm,
yeah, Jane, Firefly is obviously one of my favorite shows. So I went with Malcolm from Firefly.
Wow. I disqualified him from my list for much the same reasons that you chose him. I thought in the whole series arc, he's like you said, he's an anti-hero, and I can't choose an anti-hero and put him on my list. I can't. It's just for my list. You got your list. I got my list. I can't do it.
These are favorite characters, though.
These are favorite characters, and so when you put them in the context of his environment, when you actually look at what was going on in the world that they created, he's a survivalist. You know, there are times then all of us can say that we have not done the right thing, yet we knew we were doing the wrong thing. And so what I liked about Malcolm was that when you got to see even in the movie Serenity, you saw something changed in him, and he decided he was going to do the right thing. And I really liked that change in his character. And
I don't think that change would have been as powerful if you hadn't had that whole series.
Oh, not even close. Not even close. That's why I would have liked to have seen a longer series, because I would like to have taken more time with that transformation.
Well, I will counter that with a slightly obscure character that we probably all know, Ransom from C.S. Lewis.
That's
Space Trilogy.
My number three. What are we doing here? He's my books category. All right, go ahead.
Well, why don't you take over? Because I blew Flash Gordon for you. Why don't you do Ransom, and then I'll add on.
Well, I mean, he's
Ben and Steve, are you really the same person?
Yeah. You notice you never see us in the same place together.
That's true. Of course, I never see Steve anyway.
Yeah, that's true. There was that one time he came up and visited, and we went and had breakfast together.
Yeah.
And the universe almost exploded.
And I took my picture twice and photoshopped it. We took our picture together.
Yeah.
Is what it was.
Wonderful.
This is all just amazing editing right now, Dr. Jace.
Yes.
Yeah, this conversation you think is live, we are actually predicting exactly what you are going to say.
Actually, the truth is you guys are both personalities of me. You are you are my different personalities, so whatever.
Well, the reason I went with Ransom was I wanted a book character, and I considered a few like Arthur Dent and Paul from Dune, but I went with Ransom because he's one of my first science fiction characters that was like from real books instead of just from comic books or from movies books about movies rather. He was one that this is a real science fiction book that's meant for older readers, and I read it, you know, when I was again in junior high. I didn't really understand what I was reading when I read it in junior high with Out of the Silent Planet and then Paralandra. But what I like about Ransom is that in the first book, I mean, he really represents us as Christians in a lot of ways, I think. In the first book, he's kind of pre-Christian, getting to know, you know, his place in the world. In the second book, he becomes essentially an evangelist in a lot of ways, where he is the guy who is fighting for the soul of this pure, untarnished by sin woman on Venus. Mm-hmm. And he is, you know, you have the demon and the angel on your shoulders. Well, he's the angel on one of her shoulders. And then you have his enemy from the first book who's becomes the demon on her other shoulder. And they're both, you know, in a fight against each other for her soul, essentially.
Right.
And he's kind of an evangelist. He's there to present God's way, God's truth. And then in the third book, he kind of lays around on a couch and waits for things to happen. So he's not doing as much on the third book. But and the third book is the one I've read the least number of times. But
and there's The Dark Tower,
which I've read once and totally did not even retain any
really
of it.
Really weird.
I
can see why he didn't finish it.
Absolutely. But the thing with The Dark Tower and then the other stories in there, too, some of the lost writings that are meant to be in there. I got into. Did you get into the whole Catherine Linskoog situation?
I sort of wandered through it when it was around, and then when it resolved, I was like, "Oh, well, that was a lot of nonsense."
Well, she wrote a couple books about why he didn't write certain things that Walter Hooper, who became the executor of his literary estate, said he had written, and you know, like The Dark Tower and some other stuff like that. And she had all these reasons for why, and this is in high school where I was really like, oh, anything C.S. Lewis, anything. And then I find this book about C.S. Lewis and I start reading it and I'm like, holy cow, what's this lady saying? And so I looked at The Dark Tower, and when I read it with a lot of suspicion, I guess.
Yeah.
And it really did just, it's not even a first draft. It feels like it's just, I'm just throwing things out there. I have this idea I want to write.
Yeah.
But anyway, with Ransom, his progression is kind of ours. And so that's kind of what I went with Ransom, from Out of the Silent Planet, Paralandra, and That Hideous Strength.
Yeah.
Which some people call that hideous book.
You don't like That Hideous Strength?
No, I do. I'm saying some people call it that because it's long and it's very domestic. There's long segments that are about washing dishes. You know, as a housewife is waiting for her husband to come home. And,
you know, he's the, as much as Flash Gordon is like the stereotypical space hero, Ransom is the stereotypical, companion.
Yeah.
You know, he's us.
He's the Everman.
Yeah.
And he's not a big space hero. He's just a guy.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. I'm reading listening to Voyage to Arcturus, and it's amazing how similar this book is to Out of the Silent Planet. And then I find out C.S. Lewis loved that book, and it kind of inspired him with Out of the Silent Planet. I thought H.G. Wells was a big inspiration behind Out of the Silent Planet, because with H.G. Wells, it was Martians invading the Earth, and with Out of the Silent Planet, it's Earthlings invading Mars.
Right.
And I think there is something to that, but...
Well, Wells also did, First Men in the Moon and stuff like that, too. So he did have some space travel stuff as well.
And C.S. Lewis, I do think, was trying to do the Wells-type story, but with a Christian worldview behind it.
Right.
So I don't know what round we're on, because...
Well, that's your number three.
That was my number three? Okay, so...
So we're on round three.
So someone do number three, then.
James, right. Why don't you do number three?
Yeah, I'm going to go in a different area, and since you did one combo, I'm going to do one combo.
Wait, who did a combo?
Because this actually really gives a kind of an insight of how I struggle to pick one character, and it explains a little bit why.
Can I predict? Wait, can I predict what this is?
Yes.
Mulder and Scully.
No.
Oh!
Ooh.
Oh!
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Oh. Man, yeah. Okay.
Good try. Now I get to slap you later.
Yeah. fish.
I will say from the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
Raphael and Leonardo.
Okay. And this is science fiction.
It's absolutely science fiction. How do they turn into Ninja Turtles? They're mutants. Mutated by radiation. Mutants.
Thank you. Okay. And this goes back to the comic books, which I had. The original comic books, which was much much different than the cartoons, very much it was darker. I personally, the two best movies, I didn't care. The time traveling one was ridiculous, but the first one, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, that one, and then TMT,
that was good.
TMNT. Yeah. The cartoon are two of my favorites. In fact, the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movie, we had it in the old VHS. I'm not joking. We probably watched it over 100 times in a matter of weeks. 2 weeks, we watch it. I'm not one who likes to watch something over and over and over again. I like to watch a whole series through and I move on to something else. But that movie, I'm sure we had to have broken it because we watched it so much. And I love the dynamics of the brothers. Each of them have different skills, but there's a special dynamic between Leonardo and Raphael. Leonardo is a natural leader, the Boy Scout, the one that people look to for leadership, although in comic books, Raphael often challenges for leadership and, in truth, is probably stronger. A lot of the incarnations in the cartoon show Leonardo as the best fighter. Well, not until when you see TMNT, the cartoon, the most recent film, it shows Raphael basically taking on Leonardo and beating him. Because when Raphael will go to a point where Leonardo will not go.
Right.
And so that's what I like when I look at these characters, when I which ones I identify. The leader, the Boy Scout, Leonardo is kind of the one that I want to be. But then there's that part of me, we're all fallen, that a little bit is like Raphael, the one that's rough around the edges, the one that you want to sometimes be the bad boy. And yeah, it's the same thing like Cyclops and Wolverine. It's that whole, are you going to be the leader or are you going to be the bad boy? And if every guy is honest, there is always a mixture of two. You have the one where you know what you should be, but then there's the you know what your fallen human nature is like. And so for me, that relationship and that struggle and that fight has always spoken to me, and I think you see it most, which is why those two films are my favorite of all of them, plus they're better. They're made better. Is the first one and the cartoon that comes out. And so I don't know what Michael Bay is going to do with this new one. He's making them aliens, which I'm really not happy about. But at the very least, I hope he has a strong through line with those two, Leonardo and Raphael. I hope they have a grasp of what that relationship is supposed to look like.
Well, say what you will about Michael Bay, you know, he usually does have a very strong vision for the movies he takes on.
Yeah, but he destroys the destroys the original fan
core
base.
Core principles, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But who doesn't? You know, I mean, the X-Men.
Peter Jackson.
Yeah, Peter Jackson.
Michael Vaughn. Bryan Singer. Christopher Nolan.
Well, that could be debated. I mean, he did a great job. It was an awesome movie, but...
Wow.
He stuck to the principles.
Yeah.
I don't want to get into all that.
So you've got. I like what you're saying there. I'm sure there's somebody who's written like a scholarly paper about the representation of the human psyche in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or something.
Yeah.
But you do have something there with that. One of them pushes the other one forward, and the other one is kind of holding the other one back, and they kind of play off each other so that, okay, you can't go that far. I won't let you. And then you need to go further because you're holding yourself back. And then where's the middle ground there?
Well, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Superman, Batman too.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what those are the types of things that I'm pointing out is that Leonardo, Cyclops, Superman, they're the Boy Scout. They're the figurehead. They're the ones that people want to aspire to. They're the symbols. But yet, there's this Wolverine, Raphael, Batman, this inner struggle. Is there a need for those types of things? You know, there's all these different questions that come up, and I like those kinds. I like the struggle of the ideal versus the reality.
That's cool. That's interesting, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. I am going to go with a illustrated hero for my next one as well, but it's not from comic books, and I don't think anyone would think that this would be on anyone's list. Do you have any guesses?
No.
Not a clue.
Spaceman Spiff.
Oh, yeah.
Spaceman Spiff from the Calvin and Hobbes comic strip.
Yeah.
I would be looking for those.
Admit it, Ben. Admit it. That was on your list.
Yeah, that was my number. No.
Because it's pure imagination. And, you know, when I was a kid that I lived, you know, I was in Spaceman Spiff's universe. You know, he came into mine, and every single time, it was almost always a like a Sunday, you know, a Sunday full color adventure of Spaceman Spiff, which would always resolve in the last panel in some ridiculous way. But then, you know, it always blows it in the last panel, but it's always hilariously funny. And just the imaginative aspect of that whole thing. I mean, Calvin and Hobbes in general, but Spaceman Spiff in specific for this list.
That's good. Yeah. Well, so like I said, I did categories, and I've done movie, TV, and book, and classic sci-fi. And this category is childhood hero. And for my number four is Luke Skywalker.
I knew he was on your list.
Because I just wanted to be him.
Yeah.
I wanted to be Luke Skywalker. And
Luke who Walker?
This is your number four, right? Is this four or five for you, Ben?
This is four. This is four. We've all done four now, right?
No, I've only done three.
Okay.
Started with four. You just started number four.
Okay, I just started number four. Well, this is number four, Luke Skywalker. I wanted to be him. Always loved the character. He was always the one, whenever we'd be talking with my friends and they'd be like, Han Solo is so cool. He's the coolest because he's the coolest. I'd be like, no, Luke Skywalker is cooler. And I never won the fight. And usually when we were playing Star Wars on the playground, I had to be Ben Kenobi anyway because of my name. And so I was just supposed to stand there and say, use the Force, Luke, to the guy who got to be the character I wanted to be.
You know, Ben, you know, I actually have to agree with you. When I saw Star Wars, I related more with Luke Skywalker than Han Solo. I didn't even like the Han Solo character until 2 and 3. I didn't really care for him because I'm like, hey, Luke is the cool one. He is the honest one. And that, again, goes in that relationship of the Boy Scout versus the Rebel. It's that same dynamic. And with Luke, the issue for me with Luke, in the first one, I was all about Luke because I related to him. I wanted to be Luke. I wanted to be that main guy. The problem is, in 2 and 3, it was less so for me, and it was for one simple reason. And I've shared with this before. It's because he looked different. He didn't look young anymore. He looked older.
Because of the plastic surgery. Exactly. From his car accident.
Exactly. And I didn't know anything about that. It just, to me, looked like, oh, there's an older guy playing this role. I didn't even know he was the same guy.
But can I tell you something? I never noticed. And I don't know if part of that was just because I didn't get to see Star Wars between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back because we didn't have a VCR. We didn't have any way to, you know. And so I walk into Empire Strikes Back. There's Luke Skywalker. Why? Because he's Luke Skywalker.
They just told you.
Yeah.
And what is it? What happens? The very first thing in Empire Strikes Back, he gets smacked in the face by a huge clawed thing.
Yeah. So it hid that. It explained some of those scars.
Yeah. But I know what you.
And he kisses his sister. And
we're not going there.
That's going to scar anybody.
Oh, Steve. But anyway,
Steve May, when Steve gets on something, he will not let go.
It's a death grip.
I still can't figure out what you're saying because, on the one hand, it's anyway. We're not going to go there. Let's go away from that very quickly.
So, I picked for my number four, Star Wars universe as well, but I picked two characters that are very similar but very different. Just very different and it's very similar at the same time. Chewbacca and Lando. No, listen to me.
Okay. Wait a minute.
Wait. I'm thinking Han Solo and Lando. I'm thinking
R2-D2-C3PO. I'm thinking
Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh my goodness.
Listen.
I'm thinking Han Solo and Leia. Or Chewbacca. Leia Skywalker.
Listen, Chewbacca and Lando Calrissian. Now, Lando, he has this... this scoundrel backstory, and he actually sells them out to the Empire and everything. But in Return of the Jedi, he's General Calrissian. You know, he has made that change. You don't really know about it. He's not a major character, so it's not a big deal. But he's there. He's the one that gets into the new Death Star. He's the one that does it. He, you know, they celebrate and everything at the end. And he has that, you know, he's come from a bad place, and now he's in a good place. And he's Han Solo's good friend at the end. Not his best friend, because that's Chewbacca. Now, Chewbacca, I didn't really... I liked Chewbacca. But when I saw him in the prequel trilogy, and I just said to myself, you know what? There he is. And then there he is in the cantina. And then you see him for the rest of the thing, and he's just doing his job, and he's doing it awesome. And that's how...
While shedding the entire time.
Yeah. While shedding the entire time, yes. But it doesn't matter, because... He's there at the beginning, and it's like he's like, really, this is what's going on. Okay, not a big deal. You know, I'm here. I'm for you, and you know he follows along. He knows more than you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially in A New Hope, he knows Ben Kenobi. You know, he's seen him before. He knows of him at the very least. And then, you know, it's sort of like R2-D2's character. You're like, well, wait a minute. You know, R2 knows everything, and all you know is beep, beep, boop, boop. But that's because if he could talk, he could tell you everything.
Okay. So,
all right.
That was completely... What I think is funny about that, Ben, is that Steve chuckled when I said Raphael and Leonardo. He's like, what? Yeah. Ha, ha, ha. And then he pulls out Chewbacca and Landau. Come on.
That's because I thought maybe we would do a comic book one later, so I didn't go comic book wise.
Oh, well.
So that's the only deal there. I don't mind the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I'll go with my number four. My number four favorite character... Which, Ben, you were sniffing in the right area, but just on the wrong one, and that is Fox Mulder.
Okay. I knew you were going to go to X-Files, but I just...
Yes.
All right.
I love Fox because...
I just thought you were going to pair them together.
No, I was not going to pair them together. You could very easily. But I like Fox because of the fact that for a good long time, I mean, he has this struggle with his sister, his missing sister. He has nothing but faith to go on. And so when people are making fun of him, when people are ridiculing him, he doesn't let public perception dictate his decisions. And plus, you know, there's, you know, obviously mystery involved with what he does and different things like that. But I just find him a very interesting character. Now, would I want Fox Mulder in my family? Probably not, but I find him to be a very interesting character that that I enjoy watching because he sticks to his convictions, and some of them I very much disagree on. In fact, later on in the series, I begin to like Scully a lot more because of her faith elements and where I like that whole dialogue between them. But as far as characters, I think he's a very intriguing character.
Yeah, yeah, and I would agree with you. I like Mulder and Scully together.
Yes.
For the same reasons you're talking about with, well, what you just talked about a little bit with Mulder, but with Raphael and Leonardo, where they definitely are individual characters, and they definitely have their own character arcs and everything like that. But they very much go together, and belong together, not just in a romantic way, but in what they do, what they believe, and how they believe it.
In a storytelling way, you know, they flip the script. You got Scully, who is the, you know, the non-believer initially, and Fox as the, you know, the emotional, you know, just trying to convince, and you don't see that, you know, up until then it would always be, you know, the other way.
Yeah.
You know, the woman who's, you know, well, she's a little flighty, so she'll believe anything. And then all of a sudden, no, look. And all of a sudden the man starts to believe and gets pulled along.
Right.
So, you know, they had just that great dynamic, the whole, you know, just him being so theoretical and her being so clinical, you know, just a fantastic depiction of, you know, two halves of the same brain.
Yeah. Now, so I'm curious, because that's round four.
Yeah.
What are your fifth ones? What do you have?
Well, my fifth one is what proves that I'm just kind of a boring person. I went with a superhero for my fifth one. And so I have movies, childhood hero, book, classic, sci-fi, and then the superhero of Superman. Because of...
What?
I know. And I look at my list and I'm just like, oh, Captain Kirk, Luke Skywalker, Superman.
Yeah. Yeah.
What an exciting list I made.
Spider-Man.
Superman would have easily been on my list. And Luke Skywalker would have been on my list, but I knew you were going to cover those guys, so I chose not to put them on my list.
Well, and I went ahead. I decided, you know, I'm just going to do it because that's what it is. I like the character of Superman. I like the character more than I like the stories in some ways.
Yes.
A lot of the comic book stories, they don't do him justice. The movies are good in character, but not good in storytelling in some ways.
Yeah. And again, I like him and Batman for the same exact reason. I would love for them to just do a Superman-Batman movie.
Yes.
To explore the same types of things that we talked about with Raphael and Leonardo. Superman would definitely be on my list of favorite characters. But to be honest, if there was a Superman movie and a Batman movie coming out, Superman's my favorite character, but I'd probably more likely see the Batman movie.
Yeah, or you might enjoy the Batman movie more.
Yeah.
The reason I like him though is because he has the power to do almost anything, but it's what he chooses to do with it.
Yeah.
And you know, people say he's boring because he's too powerful. Well, you just have a villain that matches him, and then you have this kind of amped up. You need to have an amped up moral conundrum for him where he has to.
I think the issue though. I think it ties into the same issue that you had with the Green Lantern movie and. Basically, what you struggle with a lot of out there space movies other than the Star Wars and Star Trek franchise is that it's the relatability.
Yeah.
When you get a godlike character like that, people just can't relate to it.
And Christopher Reeve did a lot to make him relatable.
Yeah, he did.
And he definitely, as an actor, if they had someone else that, you know, some of the screen tests that I've seen, like, of different people they could have brought in, just no, it just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
But with him, yeah, there is that relatability factor. But I relate to him though.
Yeah.
I relate to him because he has these moral conundrums. He has he knows the right thing to do. He knows he has to help people, but then in the first movie, he has to help people or choose not to do what his father said you can never do. You cannot change the past. Now, take away the ridiculousness of spinning around the world. Although he's not spinning the world backwards, he's actually going back in time. I don't think he's actually spinning the world backwards. Like, everyone complains about, oh, he spun the world backwards and made it, you know, twist around and go backwards. No, he's going back in time.
Yeah.
And I don't know. The problem with that is that he's not there with himself then. It would make sense because, oh, one of us goes and gets that missile, the other one goes and gets that missile.
Yeah,
we can pick that apart, but
they needed to foreshadow that. That was the issue. They didn't foreshadow that good enough.
Well, I mean, it's a speed thing, but beyond that, I mean, he has to choose. Do I do what my father told me not to do, or do I help these people? And it's not perfect, but it is. It's good, and it's emotional because of Christopher Reeve. And then
the problem is that the best stories have Superman making that choice. The problem is that gets boring if that's the only option to really see him.
But the second movie doesn't do that, then. The second movie has him giving up his power and set the template for every second superhero movie to come after that, where he loses his power, gives up his power, and, you know, to have a normal life because the power sets him apart. And by doing that, he then – who comes? Powerful people from his planet that he can't do a thing about, and he has to give that up. It's a sacrifice.
And
so I mean, you have these different. He can be done well, is what I'm saying. And
I'll be interested to see how they do this next one. Man,
I am so curious. I don't want to know anything. I want to go in as clean as possible.
Yeah, me
but
too.
I really want this movie to be to be about being a light in the darkness.
So, Steve, be honest. Superman was on your number five, wasn't it?
was not.
No, he said he was staying away from comic books.
Yeah.
So that, I felt relieved when he said that. Like, okay, good. I have at least two that are just my own.
At least two.
I have a boring list, and I copied half of Steve's.
But you know what? I have sort of a dilemma. So I want Jace to go first so I can decide which one I want to have as my fifth.
Okay.
All right. So I was surprised there. I thought he was going to go with the Tribbles and, you know, Khan. At least
Khan,
those two
is really
connect.
It's really a hero if you think about it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I will go. I have several people on my list that I was debating, but you know, I was debating with Jack O'Neill of SG-1. I was debating of Crichton from Farscape.
Me too.
But those are all leader characters that I've kind of covered. Crichton's a little bit like Malcolm in some degree. Jack O'Neill is, they're different. Of course, O'Neill, he has a really cool last name like me. Although,
but spelled different twice.
Yeah, I spell mine correctly. But, but so I decided to go in a different direction. I'm going to go with the Lost franchise.
Okay.
And I'm going to pull out Mr. Echo.
Ooh.
Nice pull.
Yeah, I'm with you. Loved Mr. Echo when they brought him in, and for me, Lost was better when he got there, and it was not as good when he left. And when I found out, I was bummed that he actually chose to leave the show.
Yeah.
From my understanding, because of some family issues, when Mr. Echo left, it left a big hole in that story, because one of the cool things about Mr. Echo was when the big black cloud came and faced him, and after the cloud had killed everyone else, looked at him and then just left him alone, you're like, man, Mr. Echo's got clout. There's something going on with Mr. Echo. And he was a man of faith. And then when you find out his backstory, he was actually a killer before he was a priest, and he just took on that role later on. I really liked the character. Now, what it did was it took away from John Locke's character, who was the character of faith up to that point. But Mr. Elko, I was really bummed out. Not to mention he could, you know, crack some heads together, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, you'd want Mr. Echo on your football team.
Even if it's a fantasy football team?
Yes.
All right. I wanted to not have the lists so male-centric.
Ellen Ripley.
So, no. Oh. But I was thinking about her, though.
I was, too.
I was.
Princess Leia.
No. I sort of thought about the no.
Wonder Woman.
Superhero.
Okay, we'll stop interrupting you. Go ahead.
Well, you can still guess. But the thing is, I wanted to at least make sure that there's at least a woman on the list. And I really thought about it, and I said, who in that realm, who in the science fiction realm, would I really say, you know, would I be able to put on my list? Ripley was real close. But I eventually went with Altera Morbius.
Crickets.
From Forbidden Planet.
Okay.
The whole movie is basically revolving around her. She's the catalyst. She's the reason why Dr. Morbius has that. I don't want to ruin the movie. Of course, it's only 50 years old. But because, you know, the whole reason why Dr. Morbius is exhibiting what he exhibits is because of, you know, her and the space guys from Earth, the Earthers, coming in and interacting with her. And she holds it together. She, you know, she knows what she's doing. She is naive. Overly naive, to the point where she's believable. If this was a person grown up, you know, 18, 19 years on a foreign planet, never saw another man except your dad, you know, how would she process that information?
I'll be honest. I wish you would have went with Ripley.
Yeah.
But the thing is, in the end, she succeeds. She marries the hero of the show, Leslie Nielsen's character, and Anne Francis just knocks it out of the ballpark. She holds that character together. She's the only female in that entire movie, and she's just as strong a character as any of the male leads.
Okay, all right. Well, let's on that note, open the mailbag, because we put out.
Are we not going to do our hated characters?
Oh, that's right. Oh, I forgot. Hated characters in sci-fi.
Hated.
The characters that we don't like that other people do like.
And just so you know, if we were going to do more female characters, I'd have to go with River from Firefly, because she is awesome.
River's great.
Yeah, River. Character. And, well, not just her. I mean,
the character is so complex and interesting. Not to mention she can flat out rocket. But yeah. Anyways, so let's move on. I just wanted to say if I had to put in my favorite. In fact, she was on my list, but River as long as she's not going to go crazy on me, she'd be on my team, because she can.
Well, I feel bad now that I took Ellen Ripley off, but I replaced. I mean, it was her or Captain Kirk. And
yeah, Kirk. She wasn't going to beat Kirk.
No, and her arc is interesting, but is not as good.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, we also wanted to give one character we hate from sci-fi, or dislike anyway. So, yes, Dr. Jace, who do you put in your list of, I don't like these guys?
Okay. Well, there's two that came to mind. The one, I don't know if other people like this character or not, because I don't
say
know the
Superman.
Friend. No.
No, that's the sci-fi Christian.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
So the one, I actually switched it, but the one that I just don't like, I've not been able to get into, I didn't like, is Captain Jack Harkness. I just don't like him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't find him a redeeming character. I don't know. You guys might know if the people of the franchise like him or not. I just don't like him very much. I wouldn't trust him on my team. I just don't. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know if you've gotten to the episode.
Oh, I don't. Yeah.
Where there is the one redeeming quality for him for me, but it's invalidated in some ways by how much bad there is from Torchwood.
Yeah. Well, that's part of it. I tried to watch Torchwood and I just couldn't, and I just don't like the character. But so he might be beloved, I don't know. But the one character, I wouldn't go as much to say as I hate this character. It just, this character annoys me, and it will be upsetting to some, is R2-D2.
Wow.
R2-D2.
R2-D2. Interesting. Yeah, no, that's a good choice for not liking a character that other people do like.
Yeah, R2-D2, and the reason why is because I don't know what he's saying, and it drives me nuts. All you know is, wow! That's pretty much all you get out of him.
And there's no facial expression. You know, you're not anything to draw from there.
I would really like to know what he's saying. Like, he pretty much is a trash can that beeps.
Yeah.
And so
and flies. He can fly a little bit.
Yeah, and to be honest, he's a little self-righteous, because C-3PO is always saying stuff, and you know that R2-D2 is making fun of him. And so, I wish there was – if I knew what he was saying, I'd probably really like the character. And I know he's supposed to be fun and cute, and I understand, and for kids, that's cool. But I just get annoyed with the character because I want to know what he's saying, and I don't know.
Can I just say I briefly considered putting him on my list of five?
Did you?
I honestly did, because I like R2-D2. I liked him a lot. And part of it, I think, is because of Empire Strikes Back, where he's with Luke. He's Luke's partner.
Yes.
You know, you have Chewbacca and Han Solo. You have R2-D2 and Luke Skywalker. He's the one that Luke can talk to.
I liked him exactly for that same reason I liked R2-D2. But then I didn't know what he was saying, and it annoyed me that I was dependent on Luke to interpret what he was saying for me.
I remember they did a special, one of those specials they used to do that I love, where they'd show like clips from different sci-fi movies, and it was hosted by Mark Hamill. And Mark Hamill's talking about, you know, oh, and then in the, you know, 10,000 million miles to the moon, they did this, da-da-da-da-da. And R2-D2 was like his co-host, and he came out at the end, and he's like, beep, 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 beep. And Mark Hamill, I don't understand. What do you mean? What are you saying? Because he's, you know, not Luke Skywalker. He can't translate droid, yeah. I guess. And he's, and it's like he was saying, it's time to go. You know, it's the end of the hour. It's time for us to go. And Luke's, oh, you know, but yeah. Okay, I can understand, Dr. Jace.
What I liked about R2-D2 is how they could get him to seem so personal. They gave him such a personality, and he's a trash can that beeps. You know, the way that...
That's good directing. That's a good creative idea from George Lucas. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that the character is interesting. It's a good convention. Basically, R2-D2 is a story convention. He is the offset of C-3PO and Luke Skywalker, and then later on with Anakin. He is basically a convention that they use in the story, which is effective, but...
Well, he's a loyal pet. I mean, you could imagine him as being a dog.
Yeah, he's a loyal pet. He's comic relief. He's...
So he's Toto.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, R2 Toto, yeah.
Well, what's wrong
but you don't expect Toto to have a conversation with someone else.
No, not like R2-D2 did.
Yeah, but the characters that they're based on, you know, in the Hidden Fortress, Akira Kurosawa's Hidden Fortress, you know, they were two peasants, and they were the comic relief. And they...
Yeah.
You know,
I know.
Okay.
Jabbered back and forth.
Steve, what do you got for us?
Oh... I don't think anyone's going to like me.
Okay, go ahead. Do it, man. Just do it.
Jeremy's going to hate me because it's Yoda.
You hate Yoda?
Really don't like Yoda. Because, well, first of all...
It's because he's short and green, isn't it?
No, it's not because of that. It's so... that his logic and his thinking and the outpouring of it is so, you know, Buddhist in concept and Taoist. The whole Force thing, he's just, you know, so... into it that it's anti-Christian, you know? So theologically I have a problem with it. In the stories, I have a problem with him because he's 900 years old. So he should be able to know the prophecies, understand the prophecies. And we've talked about this before.
What the prophecies are.
So I have a problem with him being, you know, this huge wise master yet not being able to, you know, put two and two together. So, you know, a discussion for another day on exactly.
Let's be honest. The real reason is because for someone who's that smart should be able to speak in better English, proper English. No? That's the real issue.
I don't mind his speech.
It's illogical.
He had 900 years to work on the language.
Yeah, say it right, Yoda. Come on.
Oh, come on. Arnold Schwarzenegger? Come on, he's
not
the governor,
years, though.
The governor of a state, and he can't even say the country that it's a part of.
No, it's there.
People don't care.
Okay, Ben, right. It's your turn.
Well,
be a good one.
I considered. Well, this is a good one. I think I considered Gambit from X-Men. Can't stand that guy. I considered Deadpool from X-Men and Marvel Comics. Can't stand. Those are two beloved characters. I can't stand. But I was thinking about this. And this is a character I used to really, really, really like. And the more that he was revealed about him and the more that I think about him and the more that I look at the way he was used, I just don't like him.
Is it Batman?
No. It's Boba Fett.
Wow. Okay.
I just don't like Boba Fett.
You're a Jango Fett fan, aren't you?
Yes, yes. Now that Jango Fett is around, I just can't stand Boba Fett. Yeah. No, I don't like him, and the more I think about the way he was used and how everyone – we thought he was so cool.
You guys realize that all three of us picked Star Wars characters.
Star Wars characters, yeah.
And, beloveds, we're going to totally alienate our listeners. One of us has just said something that alienates everyone. You know.
I love Star Wars.
But
I had two Star Wars characters on my list, so
– it's when I looked at how he was – used, and I was thinking about him. Some people were talking about him, or I was listening to a podcast or something, and I was just like, you know what? No, I don't. He looked cool. That was all he had going for him. And he has this so much love. And I was one of those guys. I mean, I loved who he looked cool. He looked awesome, but he dies stupid.
Yeah.
And then you see him as a kid, and it's just, you know, the weird thing with his dad's head getting cut off right in front of him. It's like this, you know, his path of, you know, to a life of crime or whatever. But, not a fan of the Boba Fett.
So, yeah, bad story arc.
Definitely a bad character arc. Cool, I mean, looking, awesome armor, but
they introduced him fantastically.
I love the concept of him, his stuff, the bounty hunter who can actually hold his own with a Jedi. I liked it. I think they didn't use him correctly. As far as the character's concerned, I think the character's incomplete, and I would love to know more about it.
Yeah, and I think the character could be redeemed in my eyes as far as become a cool character, and I don't know if it would be something where he didn't die in the Sarlacc pit like they've tried in some books and stuff, I guess, and they did in the comic book that I had when I was younger.
Yeah.
Or if it'd be, let's do something with him, you know, more when he, you know, in between his dad getting killed.
You have to believe if Boba Fett is as cool as they say he is, that, and he still has all his equipment, couldn't he shoot his way out of that place?
Well, you'd think so, but
you know what? He's so cool. There are actually two different stories about how he got out of the Sarlacc pit.
My favorite is that he just gets vomited out. The Sarlacc in the comic book I had when I was a kid, Sarlacc just puked him out.
Right.
And well, that's how you could continue his story. He becomes a legend, that there's so many stories about how he got out, and each one is greater than the last one.
Yeah.
And it turns out he was just puked out.
And in the and in the expanded Star Wars universe, he actually meets Han Solo, you know, years later, and they come to some, you know, amicable a gentleman's agreement or something. And I forget exactly how the story goes, but it does play out. His character does have this final, you know, part of the story arc. So
maybe that's episode 7. Return of Boba Fett.
7.5.
All right, we need to open our mailbag. It's getting late, and we've got just a little bit to do.
Mailbag.
I put the question out to our Facebook account, and then also to our Twitter account, and with the thought of maybe bringing back Twitterbot. The question went out on Facebook, and it said, you know, who's your favorite, and Hank Harwell just wanted to hear Twitterbot say Max Headroom. So I do have Twitterbot. Twitterbot, are you here? Can you say Max Headroom for Hank? Can you say it? No?
No.
Max Headroom.
There we go. That was for you, Hank Harwell.
Max Headroom.
Max Headroom. All right. So, Daniel Butcher from the Sci-Fi Christian, he said Han Solo is his favorite. Dave Goulet, he came through for me. He said Caesar from Planet of the Apes, and then said, okay, technically it's Cornelius in the first three movies, then Caesar, but the actor under the makeup played them pretty much the same. I was going to say almost that exact same thing. He said it, so I didn't have to waste one of my five on that. So
wasted.
Ryan Dunlap, a writer friend of mine, he said Wash from Firefly. And Matt Anderson from the Sci-Fi Christian said Sam from Quantum Leap, Jack from Lost, Chief Galen Tyrell from Battlestar Galactica, Shepard Book from Firefly, Fox Mulder and the Cigarette Smoking Man from The X-Files, Walter Bishop from Fringe, Doc Brown and Marty McFly from Back to the Future, Batman, Spider-Man, Ender Wiggin from Ender's Game, and Billy Pilgrim from Slaughterhouse-5.
I have two things to say to Matt.
Yes.
Matt evidently is Steve in another form. And two, he says Shepard from Firefly. He was in one of my most disliked characters.
Really?
Really?
Yes. I did not know that.
Wow. Yes. Especially in the movies where he goes, you don't have to it doesn't matter what you believe in, just believe in it. That character was flushed on the toilet for me. So Ben, now we know Steve actually just went and started his own podcast. Because they both have 47 lists. Only Steve would do that. So Matt, Steve, whatever your name is,
Okay, so I did have that.
Whatever your name is.
One person on Twitter, and that's my buddy John, who goes by the handle LaCello. And so here is, because he played the cello. So Twitterbot is going to read John's list.
From LaCello, Doc Brown, his hair. BSG's Hilo, he's just cool. Sila, he had the best power. Buck Rogers, Fath childhood SF hero. Nightcrawler, Bamf. Morpheus, nothing phases him. Data, infinitely likable. Donnie Darko, sacks his own life to save others.
So that was from my friend John. My high school friend John, I should add. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, I would take issue with some of his choices, but I don't think that's...
After the people I listed, you're like, really? What? Anyway...
Interesting list, though.
Do we have any other mailbags or anything?
We do. We have one letter. It's not letter. Email. Nobody sends letters to us. It'd be awesome if they did, but that means I have to give out the address. It's from Tom, who has helped us host before, and he has a correction and some observations as he's been listening to our podcast, and he said, "Hi Ben, Steve, and Dr. Jace. Wow, so much I have to catch up on here. It's been months since I've written. I'm cracking my knuckles right now. You better sit back and get comfortable." Wink. That's a winky emoticon. While certain sections are addressed specifically to certain hosts, this is meant to be read by everyone. Of course, not on the air though. Your podcast can only last for so many hours.
Smiley face.
I am going to. No, that was the open mouth smiley face.
Open mouth smiley face.
I am going to read some of this though because I do need to apologize to Tom. He says, "First of all, congratulations to all three of you for making it a year with this podcast. Ben, thanks so much for saying that making friends with me was one of the nice things that came out of doing the podcast. I enjoy knowing you guys too. It's been an honor to be on the show a couple times. I do, however, have to correct you on my last name. It's actually Holste, not Holst. You pronounce the E on the end. I know it's not typical grammar. The word place doesn't have a pronounced E, for instance, but think of the word Nestle. You pronounce the E there. It's the same with my name." And so I do want to apologize. He says, "No harm done. It's a very common mistake, but I do feel bad. I always try to get names right, and when I can't, I feel bad." He also says, "Dr. Jace, I'm glad to finally hear that you're enjoying Doctor Who. Sorry it took you so long." And then he gets into the ripoffs episode. He says, "Yes, I'm going back a bit. A high five to Dr. Jace for noticing that Cars was a ripoff of Doc Hollywood." I thought the same thing. Then he says, you all did mention Independence Day being a ripoff of War of the Worlds, right? It's been a while. I can't remember. I think that's the most obvious sci-fi rip of all time. Also, Avatar ripped off Damascus with Wolves, Ferngully, The Last Rainforest, and Disney's Pocahontas. It's staggering to me that the most popular movie ever, so to speak, is basically just, as one friend put it, and this is why I'm reading this, because we did talk about Avatar.
Yeah.
But it's basically just, as one friend put it, Ferngully with nudity. Yep.
And just bad. And swearing.
And then Christmas themes, he says, here's an obscure one for you. You all know Toy Story, right? Well, Jim Henson produced a TV special in 1986 called The Christmas Toy, which is all about a toy, in this case a stuffed tiger, who doesn't want to be upstaged at Christmas by the new toy that's getting all the attention, an outer space warrior action figure, although in this case it's a female. Whether or not the Pixar team knew about this special is open to debate, but check it out by renting the disc from Netflix or something. The similarities are scary, and this is coming from someone who still loves Toy Story. And you know what? This is Ben again. I totally agree. It goes further than that. They can't let humans see them move. Of course, they'll die. They'll totally just die if they get seen. But it is. Have you guys seen the Christmas Toy?
I have. No?
Okay. I remember watching it when I was very young, as a little tiny kid. And then I got on a DVD and watched it once with my kids, and they won't ever watch it again because it freaks them out. So, then the ending we wanted... What any do I wish I could change? The 2012 elections, he says.
Nice.
Sticky out tongue face. But seriously,
that,
I agree.
You're reading that. That's what Tom said.
What? Yes, definitely.
Tom said that, not Ben said that.
But seriously, I agree about sliders. You didn't spend much time on this one, though, because you said you'd talked about it before. I don't remember that podcast, though. Which episode was that? I think we talked about it in the...
Shows that ended too soon.
Shows that ended too soon, yeah. But then here's an interesting one. This is why I wanted to read this. He said, I would also put Quantum Leap on my list of shows that needed a better ending.
Yeah, I would.
Anyone who's seen the Bizarre Acid Trip that was the final episode knows exactly what I'm talking about. And I agree that All Good Things and Farscape, the Peacekeeper Wars were terrific finales. But yeah, the Quantum Leap finale, you know what that reminds me of? Is the Lost finale.
Exactly.
Because of the way it's so weird and, yeah, trippy. Loved it, though.
Half the
time loved the
through
Quantum
the show,
Leap
he doesn't know what's propelling him in time. And at times he thinks it's God and he prays through several of them. So there's a lot of spiritual themes in a lot of them. But then you get to the final one and it's this very secular, it's always been you the entire
it's
time.
It's universal. I mean, the stuff on the church walls, I don't know what church they're in, but you know, it's
well,
all
wait,
different
wait. We're talking Quantum Leap
symbols.
We're talking
about
Quantum Leap, Steve.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. No, I agree with you about Lost there, but no, we're in
Quantum
Leap.
Glad you're listening.
No, the thing with Quantum Leap, I liked the ending. The thing was, everything about the show up until that point was very grounded.
Yes.
You know, you came from this point in time. You are going to these points in time. You are tethered to this point in time through the technology. And there might be an evil leaper, which I don't know if they ever did anything to wrap that up, but there might be an evil leaper who the same kind of thing is happening with them. And it was all very grounded in this very specific mythology that they thought out. And then with that finale, it just gets thrown all out the window. I did like it, though. I liked the finale. I thought it was really weird, and I was very confused and trying to figure out what was going on, and I liked that. But definitely, it didn't fit the rest of the show.
Yeah.
Then he says, all the best, Tom H., possibly because he doesn't want me pronouncing his last name again.
Holstein.
So, all right. Well, I think that's our show, then. You guys have anything to add?
Please forgive us, Star Wars fans. I blame Ben and Steve. They made me say R2-D2, and
you can't blame us because we're just reflections of your personality.
I forced this hand on the R2 thing.
Oh man, you remembered that. That's true.
Yeah,
that's true. The problem is which parts of my personality are you? That's the real question.
Well, I'm the bad boy that's trying to push you to take more risks.
I'm so the lobotomized. That's the part that has been lobotomized from you.
Oh.
Steve is your lost memory.
The frontal lobe.
All right, guys. Well, good night. I'm going to sleep.
All right.
Thanks for listening. Godspeed. This was the Strangers and Aliens podcast with Ben Avery, Dr. Jace O'Neill, and Stephen MacDonald. Our music was written, recorded, and mixed by Tim Leffel. Visit our website, www.strangersandaliens.com, where we have reviews, articles, and links. We want to hear from you. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/strangersandaliens, or on Twitter, where we are under the name Strange and Alien. You can contact us through our website by writing a message or leaving us a voicemail using your computer's microphone or emailing us at podcast@strangersandaliens.com. Finally, you can call us and leave a message. Our number is 1-840-37-ALIEN. That's 1-840-372-5436. Thank you for listening.
Savior of the universe. He'll save every one of us. He's for every one of us. Stand for every one of us. He'll save with a mighty hand every man, every woman, every child with a mighty flash.